On May 13th, CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky had a message for the country. With more than 250 million COVID vaccine shots delivered, with cases and deaths down nationally, the public health agency was lifting its mask mandate, but not for everyone.
If you are fully vaccinated, you can start doing the things that you had stopped doing because of the pandemic. We have all longed for this moment, when we can get back to some sense of normalcy.
Several states immediately lifted their mask mandates. Here's Virginia Governor Ralph Northam the following day.
So in Virginia, we are lifting our universal mask mandate consistent with CDC guidance. As you know, we are easing some mitigation measures tomorrow. Now we are able to move up the timeline to end them all thanks to the new CDC guidance.
At least 24 states now have no mask mandate, but there's a problem. Many people who haven't been vaccinated have stopped wearing their masks, too. Dr. Anthony Fauci thinks he knows why.
I think people are misinterpreting, thinking that this is a removal of a mask mandate for everyone. It's not.
Dr. Walensky herself went back on TV again and again, trying to clear up the confusion.
If they are not vaccinated, they are not safe. They should still be wearing a mask or, better yet, get vaccinated.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. And to be fair, the CDC had made that very point over and over right from the day the new guidance was announced. But in public health, the challenge is always to give Americans from coast to coast in different kinds of communities with different levels of risk a simple message about the incredibly complex job of controlling a pandemic. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And joining me from Seattle is Ed Yong, a science writer for The Atlantic. He recently won the Pulitzer Prize for explanatory reporting for his tremendous coverage of the pandemic across this past year. We've been honored to have Ed on the show several times as well. He's back with us now because he has a new article in The Atlantic titled "The Fundamental Question of the Pandemic is Shifting." Ed, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me again.
Also, congratulations on the Pulitzer. I've been waiting to be able to tell you that in person, at least over the radio. Okay, so first of all, what is this fundamental question and what's shifting about it?
So I think from a year ago, everyone wanted to know, how will the pandemic end? And as we as vaccinations rise and we actually enter the start of the end game, I think the question is different now. The question really should be, for whom has the pandemic not yet ended? Who still bears the risk that remains? And what should the rest of us be doing? Like, how is society still shunting the full collective problem of COVID-19 onto people who are still vulnerable to it?
Okay, and so then, given that shift, which, by the way, vulnerable Americans have always been particularly at the heart of concern regarding this pandemic, as you point out in your story. But so then what was the concern amongst some public health experts about what the CDC announced in mid-May?
So the concern is that the CDC is the nation's top public health agency. Its goal is to protect the health of entire communities, of the entire nation. Its job is to coordinate safety across the entire country. And as a public health agency, its job is to center equity, to think about equity and the most vulnerable at the very core of its advice and its actions. And instead, its guidance, which revolved mostly around what vaccinated people could or could not now do, centered people who actually had quite a lot of privilege, people who had the earliest and easiest access to the vaccines, and not to the folks who are still incredibly vulnerable to the pandemic, people who are immunocompromised, people who are essential workers, Black and Latino communities with low rates of vaccinations, by instead, casting their guidance as great news for people who are vaccinated, it sent out this cultural signal, as you saw in the clips at the start of this segment, that masks are no longer needed, that the pandemic is nearly over, that we are heading back towards this era of normalcy. And that cultural signal led to the lifting of mask mandates in many, many states, creating a situation that that further disadvantaged those vulnerable communities who were already disadvantaged during the pandemic.
Okay, so let's listen to what President Joe Biden said on the day that the CDC announced its new guidance and lifted the mask mandate. Again, this was mid-May. Here's the president in the Rose Garden celebrating the news.
I think it's a great milestone, a great day. It's been made possible by the extraordinary success we've had in vaccinating so many Americans so quickly. To date, we've given out 250 million shots in 114 days. And we're seeing the results. Cases are down in 49 of 50 states.
Now, Ed, I want to just explore this for a second, because if I'm seeing the numbers correctly, I'm seeing as of early this month, just over 60% of U.S. adults have had at least one COVID shot. Does that jive with your understanding where we are right now?
Yes, that's right. So I've got the latest numbers from the CDC itself in front of me, and we have 65.7% of adults, so people over the age of 18, have had their first shot. It's 53.7% of the total population. So it's great. It's also plateauing. You know, the rates of vaccination have slowed down, and there are still significant proportions of the country who haven't even had their first shot yet.
Well, I mean, at least we're looking at almost 40% or 35% of adults, right, by
Absolutely.
Definition. Okay, yeah. But when you described the groups that are particularly vulnerable now, though, they're not all the same, right? The reasons why they haven't received at least one shot are not all the same. I mean, you pointed out essential workers. That comes as a little bit of a surprise to me, Ed. I mean, do we know how many people classified or seen as essential workers haven't been vaccinated? My understanding was when the vaccine campaigns began, that after people's 60 years old and plus received their vaccinations, essential workers were supposed to be right up there next in line.
Yeah, I think when it comes to people who haven't been vaccinated yet, there's a lot of focus on people who are sort of antagonistic to the vaccine, right? So there's a lot of talk about vaccine hesitancy, whether you deny COVID is a problem at all, or whether people are just sort of waiting, they're concerned about side effects and things like that. But I feel like there's not a lot of attention paid to problems of access. So people who actually want to get vaccinated and haven't been able to. And that applies to a lot of minority groups. It applies to a lot of like Hispanic communities, Black communities. The problem there is it isn't one of hesitancy. The problem is that a lot of people, even though they are technically eligible to get a vaccine, have a lot of barriers standing in their way. It may be that in their communities, there's just no vaccination site within easy access, or it's difficult to get transportation options to get to those sites. It might be that you work in hourly wage jobs and you can't take the time off to visit a vaccination site. And you certainly don't have the option of having paid sick leave to deal with the very famous side effects of getting the vaccinations. There's a lot of reasons why people who are technically eligible to get a vaccine and might want to still haven't been able to yet. And that's sort of what I'm talking about when I talk about this ongoing vulnerability. We're sort of forgetting about those people and pretending that anyone who wants to get a vaccine can. Like, that's technically true, but it's also not true.
Well, your point about the lack of sick leave is very well taken, right? A persistent problem in terms of the overall treatment of workers in this country. But if I remember correctly, and I just pulled this up again from the White House, that in late March, March 29th, the White House announced, President Biden announced, that 90% of the adult U.S. population was eligible for vaccination at that time, and that by April 19th, 90% of the U.S. adult population would have a vaccination site within 5 miles of home. Mm. Now, that ostensibly should have taken care of the access problem, right? I mean, they were going to expand the federal pharmacy vaccination program from 17,000 sites to nearly 40,000 sites across the country again, and stand up more than a dozen more mass vaccination sites by mid-April. Did that not happen, or are there still access issues, as you're talking about?
So my understanding from talking to local public health people and you know folks who work on the ground in the vaccination game is that there are still access problems in terms of like that physical element. But there are certainly access problems in terms of the other bit that we talked about, like just being able to take the time to actually get the shots and then to recover from possible side effects. And you can see that in like some of the surveys that have been conducted. So the Kaiser Family Foundation has done some great work on looking at attitudes among people who are unvaccinated. So according to their surveys, a third of unvaccinated Hispanic adults want a vaccine as soon as possible, and that's twice the proportion of unvaccinated white people. But among that group, large proportions were worried that they might need to miss work because of reputed side effects. They were worried that getting vaccination might jeopardize their immigration status or their family's immigration status. And you know that's what I'm talking about. There are still these societal barriers that stand in the way of vaccination, just as there have been societal barriers that have stopped people from taking precautions or keeping themselves free from infection in the first place.
Okay, well, we're joined today by Ed Yong. He's a science writer, the Pulitzer Prize-winning science writer for The Atlantic. His latest article is titled "The Fundamental Question of the Pandemic is Shifting," and we have a link to that at onpointradio.org. We have a lot more to talk about when we come back about public health messaging in this changing phase of the pandemic. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about this changing phase of the pandemic and the issue of individual choice and public health across the United States when it comes to COVID-19 and how to get the public health messaging right. I'm joined today by Ed Yong. He's science writer for The Atlantic. He won the Pulitzer Prize this year for a phenomenal year of reporting he did in 2020. His latest article is "The Fundamental Question of the Pandemic is Shifting," and Ed joins us from Seattle. Let's listen to some of the feedback that we've been getting from listeners about this question of public health messaging and public health versus individual choice. This is Amy, who called us from Sarasota, Florida, and here's what she had to say about wearing masks.
I absolutely believe we have a responsibility to those around us when it comes to the concerns for public safety. I think that as we move forward, those who choose not to be vaccinated will indeed suffer some consequences for it. But I do think as a collective, we should all consider the health of everyone around us. This is not just about one person being sick. This is about a world of people being sick.
On Point listener Amy from Sarasota, Florida. Now, on the day that the CDC issued its new mask guidance, May 13th, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, CDC director, spoke to PBS's Judy Woodruff. And Dr. Walensky says that one size does not fit all when it comes to the new mask guidelines.
The move today was really to talk about individuals and what individuals are safe doing. The hard work that we have ahead of us at CDC is to now take our guidance in each individual setting and apply the guidance that we released today to each of these individual settings. What does this mean for transport and for our travel corridors? What does this mean for schools? What does this mean for child care centers? What does this mean for many other settings?
That's Dr. Rochelle Walensky in mid-May. Well, joining us now is Joe Allen, professor at Harvard University's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. We've had him on the show several times to talk about ventilation in schools, and he has also recently written several op-eds about this same shifting phase of the pandemic, including he wrote a month or two ago about individual decision-making now being at the center of the pandemic. His latest op-ed in the Washington Post was headlined, "The CDC's Critics Are Wrong." Professor Allen, welcome back to you.
Thanks for having me back, Magda. And let me also congratulate Ed. I'm a big fan of his work. So congrats, Ed, in person on the Pulitzer.
Well, so this is a really important question that I think the whole nation has to grapple with now, Joe. So first of all, what is it that you say the CDC's critics have wrong?
Well, I think first is that where I think CDC is right is that they have the science right. And let's be clear, the vaccines are extraordinarily safe and extraordinarily effective at protecting you and protecting you from others. So that's quite clear. There, and then it follows that their guidance is clear. If you're vaccinated, you can start to pull back from some of these controls. If you're not, the same playbook that has existed for the past year must be followed or should be followed. That includes masking and everything else. Where I also think they got it right and critics have it wrong is that we're moving past the point where we need this top-down prescriptive approach, considering, look what's happening across the country. You know, should Vermont have to follow this top-down guidance when they have extraordinarily or excellent vaccination rates and other states have lower vaccination rates? To me, we needed this freeing up a bit in terms of the top-down guidance so individual states and even companies could make these separate decisions based on the current risk in their area.
Mm. But you heard what Ed said a little earlier about the concern being that there are vulnerable sections of the United States, vulnerable parts of the population that may want to get vaccinated, but are having difficulty doing so. And then so if the public's health is going to be protected, that maybe a continuation of some top-down guidance to protect those very people is essential, Joe, for the public at large.
Yeah, and this is where I totally agree with Ed. I mean, this is fundamental to public health. Our goal is to protect the most susceptible subpopulations. But I guess I disagree in that, you know, that having people who are vaccinated not wear masks doesn't put other people at risk. And so if the vaccines were not effective at preventing transmission, as there was concern about this in early winter, then that would be a different scenario. But we know that if I'm vaccinated, I'm a low risk to anybody else I'm around. And so that's why I don't think this is CDC's stance on this isn't really putting others at risk. I think where it gets interesting is in the implementation of this. There are some states that moved too quickly and some organizations and companies that said that took CDC's guidance, which did not say the pandemic is over, but took it to mean that. Now, I think we could argue about how CDC messaged that, and maybe that was the wrong impression they gave out. But really, the guidance is if you're masked, you don't need these other controls. Hmm. And it's straightforward in that sense, but not so straightforward in the implementation.
Ed Yong responded to that. What do you think?
So I think Joe's absolutely right about implementation being a critical problem. And many of the CDC's critics who I've talked to have made the same point that yes, you know, technically the science is correct. Like people who have been vaccinated are indeed safe and unlikely to pose a serious risk to other people. But if you release that information into the world without talk about vulnerable populations, without talk about implementation plans, then, as I've said, you create this cultural signal that masks are no longer needed, full stop. Like if you create guidance that people widely misinterpret, you don't get to blame people for misinterpreting. Like the problem is in your guidance. And especially you do not get to blame people for misinterpreting your guidance if you are the CDC, who is a public health agency who absolutely has the expertise to understand how guidance is received at a population level, that is fully within the remit and the expertise of public health. And, you know, the CDC could very well have said that here's what the science shows, and therefore here are the practical the implications for implementation. Like, states could lift mask mandates when they hit, say, X percent of vaccinated people or X number of cases. They could, you know, if you were being interesting and radical about it, tie the lifting of mask mandates to equity-based measures to protect those vulnerable people who we've talked about. And that's not what happened. Instead, we had the guidance being released. And if anything, like, measures that work against the local level flexibility that Joe was rightly championing. So we had, you know, some states specifically preventing their counties or their local institutions from issuing their own mask mandates. So that's more imposition of top-down inflexibility. Mm. We had some states that had flexible plans that had tied the lifting of mandates to the metrics that I talked about and just, like, cast them aside because, to their interpretation, the CDC's announcement was like, job's done, you know, vaccinated people are great, the era of mass masking is over.
Okay, so there's a lot there that I actually want to dig into a bit more. So, Joe, hang on here for just a second. But, Ed, so first and foremost, I absolutely take your point about not just CDC, but the Biden administration as well. And obviously, the Trump administration wasn't going to give any kind of targets for the nation to aim for regarding beating back the pandemic. But let's focus on who's in power now. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that I talked to Dr. Anthony Fauci, and I literally asked him this question multiple times. What should we be aiming for? Give me a metric. You are advising the president. You talk to him. What kind of things do you advise the White House and the CDC on measures by which we, the American people, can understand we are making meaningful progress to permanently defeating this pandemic? And he would not give them to me. So there is a persistent decision to not do that. And can you just, do you have any sense as to why that is, Ed?
Yeah, it's tough to know what the right metrics are. And I think the real answer, I sense, is that we actually haven't had a discussion about what the end game goal is here, right? Like, is the goal to actually end the pandemic or to get it down to a certain tolerable level? And if that's the latter is the case, which it sort of feels to me like it's the case, then what is that level? Like, at what, you know, is the goal, as I've said in my piece, to just get the pandemic down to a level where it only affects communities that the privileged among us are okay with? And it sort of feels like that's the direction we're heading in, you know, where we get to a certain level of safety where a lot of people get to feel comfortable. And, you know, the fact that there are still a lot of communities that are really suffering for various reasons under the yoke of COVID-19, that, you know, we just get to normalize to that.
Okay.
And I think that without that discussion, as you've said, about what the end game actually looks like and how to achieve it, without the implementation talk that we've already discussed, you know, we're going to slide into that latter situation.
I mean, you could make the argument that that's how the American health system operates, even, you know, pre-pandemic. But
you certainly could.
But Joe Allen, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, well, you know, I agree with Ed. You know, the country has taken a path that I don't think any of us wanted to take starting last year, where we didn't pursue a zero COVID approach. We approached, well, a non-response from the federal government for an entire year. And I agree, we haven't really talked about what our goal is here. And it seems that we're just saying we're going to get it to some tolerable, somewhat manageable level, and then we're good. I also agree and wrote in the Washington Post in early May that we shouldn't have pulled off on these mask mandates. And for me, it was until early July, so 6 weeks after we started talking about this with the CDC. But I think it speaks to, you know, a bigger question on you know, what's actually happening. And I think CDC's guidance is responding to this and correctly. So, for example, in Massachusetts, where I am, we're down to less than one case per 100,000 right now. Very few hospitalizations, very few deaths. Some of the major hospitals in Boston, which dealt with the peak of the pandemic here, are reporting sometimes not seeing anybody, or some physicians are reporting that. So we're starting to see that what we know about vaccinations, when you hit these high vaccination rates, it starts to protect even those who can't get vaccinated, including young kids. And importantly, what I think is missed in the vaccination conversation very often is that it's a combination of percent of people vaccinated and the people who are naturally infected at great cost to lives and livelihoods. And there's some overlap between those groups, which we don't know and is not knowable, actually. And all of those are having this effect to drive down overall population level risk. And I think we're thinking about the CDC's perspective or the administration's perspective. Once you start having hundreds of millions of people who are vaccinated and at very low risk, it seems, let's say, impossible to then say we're going to keep slowing down the reopening. People know they're protected. They want to get back. And we also don't talk about the lives and livelihoods of many of the businesses who've been put out of business because people haven't been out and about. So there's another aspect of public health we don't always talk about, and it's that. It's the people who have lost their livelihoods because the economy has been shut and we put in these restrictions. So it's obviously complicated, but I think all the signs point to that the vaccinations are having their effect. It doesn't mean we're done in terms of access and being sure it's fair and equitable access. Yeah. And I don't think CDC signaled that.
So, Joe, let me follow up with something. You heard a minute or two ago Ed say that if there's sort of uneven response to CDC public health communication, the problem isn't with how people are responding. The problem is with the CDC's communication of its guidance. And I think that's a fair criticism overall because, up until fairly recently, the entire world held the CDC up as the premier public health agency in the world. But regarding this guidance about vaccinations and masks, I mean, I'm just thinking back to the tape of Dr. Walensky that we played at the very top of the hour. It seems to me that she was actually crystal clear, right? If you are fully vaccinated, then you can go about doing the things that you stopped doing prior because of the pandemic. If you are fully vaccinated, I mean, that I'm not quite sure how much more clear you can get. So, I mean, it isn't part of this. We also do have to talk about individual reception of public health messaging. And I'm not diminishing Ed's points about vulnerable populations. But still, don't we all, as part of the public, have a responsibility to take on board guidance that's pretty clear?
Yeah, and if we're thinking about hesitancy as a major issue, part of that communication from Dr. Walensky is telling the world and the American public that the vaccines work and they're really effective. And there's been confusion out there. Even the caller who had the comment there says, well, I'm vaccinated, I'm going to continue to wear a mask. That's fine. If you want to wear a mask, that's terrific. But I think we have a misunderstanding out there on, you know, protection and where vaccines come in these, you know, layered defense controls we've been talking about for the past year. Some people talk about the Swiss cheese model. Well, you have to have masks, you have to have distancing, that's good. Ventilation, filtration, that's where I've been harping on for over a year. But when we think about, you know, in these Swiss cheese models or layered defense, people have sometimes put the vaccines last. They're actually first. Once you have the vaccine, it's no longer Swiss cheese, right? There's no holes in that, you know, no absolutes, of course. So you can start to pull back from these other controls. And we hear just as much confusion on the other side of this, where people who are vaccinated still feeling uncomfortable, not quite sure the vaccines work. So I think important in Dr. Walensky's message there to the public was vaccines work. And when you do this, you can start to get back to the things you know and love safely.
Mm. I mean, Ed, is CDC doing an adequate or inadequate job about sending out clear messaging and guidance about these other aspects to manage the pandemic that Joe Allen just talked about?
You mean about how effective the vaccines are?
Well, effectiveness. And as Joe said, he's been talking for the better part of a year about still getting good ventilation in places, you know, things like that.
So I'm not sure that they are. To an extent, yes. As Joe said, their guidance does highlight the power of the vaccines, and I think Joe is absolutely right in noting just how extraordinarily effective they are, not only in preventing infection but also it seems in preventing transmission. I do, however, still think that the Swiss cheese model is appropriate, certainly at a population level, because of what we talked about earlier, the fact that significant proportions of the US still are not vaccinated and need the continued persistence of a lot of those other layers of defense, of masks, of better ventilation, of rapid testing, all the things that for much of last year weren't, you know, just weren't invested in. And I can understand why people like our listener before are still concerned about that. You know, so as another public health expert explained to me, you know, for much of last year, we had nothing to protect us. No one was helping us. All we had was masks. So it's no wonder that people are a bit reticent about taking them off. And I think that one thing that isn't often talked about in this discussion is that that vulnerability that lingers among people who are unvaccinated, it's not randomly strewn about the population, right? That's clustered in pockets because people who are unvaccinated tend to group together socially and geographically. So even in areas where you have high levels of vaccination, there's still the potential for localized outbreaks. And we need to be thinking about that risk, about the places and communities that are still vulnerable.
Yeah. Well, Ed, stand by here for a second. Joe Allen, I know I was supposed to let you go at this break, but I've got one more question for you. Can you stick with us for about 2 or 3 more minutes?
Yeah, of course. Happy to.
Okay, so we'll be right back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about the new phase of the COVID-19 pandemic, and as captured in Ed Yong's most recent article in The Atlantic, the fundamental question of the pandemic is shifting. So we're asking, how is it shifting, and what does that mean for the public health messaging and guidance coming out of the CDC? And Ed Yong does join us today. He's science writer at The Atlantic. Won the Pulitzer Prize this year for a year of phenomenal reporting across 2020. Joe Allen is with us as well, professor at Harvard University's T.H. Chan School of Public Health and co-author of Healthy Buildings, How Indoor Spaces Drive Performance and Productivity. He published an op-ed recently in the Washington Post titled "The CDC's Critics Are Wrong." Well, let's listen to the director of the CDC, Dr. Rochelle Walensky. She was on ABC's This Week after she had announced the new vaccination and masking guidelines in mid-May. And host Martha Raddatz had this question.
Who is supposed to be the vaccination police? You look at Costco and Walmart, these essential workers. What are they supposed to do? There's a quarter of the country that says they will not get vaccinated.
We are asking people to take their health into their own hands, to get vaccinated. And if they don't, then they continue to be at risk. For the unvaccinated, our policy has not changed.
CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky in mid-May. On Point listener Chris called us from Detroit, and he said he thought the CDC's new masking rules are a mistake, and here's why.
In Detroit right now, we only see under 40% of eligible Detroiters vaccinated, fully vaccinated. I felt like they were really kind of throwing folks who may have historic reasoning to be very concerned about the health system in this country, and they were leaving those folks behind.
That's On Point listener Chris from Detroit. So, Joe Allen, Ed earlier said something really important, and I'm going to paraphrase it and call it the other pandemic, the pandemic of unequal access to public health tools, to vaccinations, to policies that enable workers to take sick days off if they have symptoms after, especially that second shot. So that's a systemic problem in the United States, and without a doubt, solving those systemic inequities when regarding healthcare is something that the nation needs to move forward towards, regardless of the pandemic. But what I'm wondering is, regarding COVID now, I mean, how long can we say, well, until we are able to get everyone equal access to vaccines, everyone else who has been vaccinated should continue to mask, should continue to modify their behavior? It seems as if we're talking about two sets of decisions that are actually on completely different timescales, and I don't know how to resolve them without conflict.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's a way that it can't be resolved without conflict. And I think this is quite honestly, the brilliance in Ed's latest piece is that he brings all of this in. And, I don't like Dr. Walensky's framing right there that health is in your hands. And Ed's piece clearly shows why health is not really in your hands, broadly speaking, right? There's a lot of factors, systemic problems, longstanding issues that lead to differences and disparities in health across races, ethnicities, socioeconomic factors. I think what she's talking about, though, in terms of health is in your hands, in this case, there's widespread access to vaccines. It is not fully everywhere, but this administration has done an outstanding job of bringing vaccines to people, making sure, as you point out early, that most people have this within a couple miles. It does not address the issue, the access issue of I can't get out of work or I can't miss because of a potential sick day. But at some point, right, the country starts to say, well, what is the metric? We've had this discussion. What is the metric? When can we get back to quote unquote normal or the way it was before? And some have proposed we start to look at these community spread metrics or hospitalization metrics. We could look at when do we start to see morbidity, mortality that resembles other diseases mm-hmm. that we've accepted, quote unquote accepted, like influenza. If we start to hit those rates, society has already decided we don't put in strict controls when we hit those levels. I think that's reasonable. I also want to talk about risk just for one second in terms of how we have to think differently about cases. A case in an 80-year-old is very different from a case in an 18-year-old. And even in these states that we think of as low vaccinated, Missouri, Mississippi, the population over 65 that is vaccinated is still over 70%. 80% of the deaths occurred in people over age 65. So even though we don't have full widespread vaccination, the vaccination rates for the most vulnerable are hitting these very high targets. And we're seeing that decrease in terms of the burden on the healthcare system, deaths and hospitalizations decreasing. So it's all wrapped up. But to your main point, there's nothing easy about this. I'm not sure it can't be confusing. But that's what I've been thinking about risk and when do we start to think we can open again mm-hmm. as a society collectively.
Well, Joe Allen, professor at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health and co-author of Healthy Buildings, How Indoor Spaces Drive Performance and Productivity. Thank you, as always, for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Meghna.
Okay, Ed, so I want to turn that same question to you and tell me what other public health experts that you've spoken to say about this, because as we talked about for the past year, the pandemic is this mirror, right? It is holding up the realities of all sorts of systems in the United States and their vulnerabilities and, in some cases, their strengths. And, of course, the vulnerabilities of the healthcare and public health system things like the workers having the opportunity to take sick days is one of those things. But fixing those policies is going to take some time. Mm-hmm. How do public health experts, if we ever fix them, by the way, but how do public health experts see that difference that different timescale when it comes to issuing the right guidance for this pandemic? I guess to put it simply, are they saying that people who have been vaccinated ought to stay masked, et cetera, until, we fix health policy in the United States?
Yeah, so I agree that these are these issues of inequities are long-standing ones, and you know they're severe because they are long-standing. And you're right to ask the question of like, do we fix them first before we can take action? Otherwise, I would sort of flip that question, mm-hmm. right? Like if you have a pandemic that has so clearly shown the inequities that are at work in US society and US healthcare, like if you don't take that as a glaring opportunity to actually improve those inequities, to actually like fight against them, then when are you going to do that? You know, it always is the case that a crisis hits and people say, okay, there are inequities. But then they get sort of pushed as the sidebar and almost in opposition of fixing what is deemed to be the main problem. But I don't think that should be how public health works. Like a lot of people have pointed out to me that there are these 10 essential principles of public health, like these 10 duties and responsibilities that the field should promote. They're there on the CDC's website. And they're presented as this circle, this rainbow-colored circle, and in the middle is an 11th one that should underpin all of them, and that is equity. Now, it doesn't mean that like we need to get to a perfectly equitable society before we start thinking about other policy measures. Far from it. But you need to start thinking about the two in tandem. And the argument from public health experts is that the CDC has made moves that not only don't really think about equity, but make them worse. Like if you start saying things like fully vaccinated people can drop their masks and go about their normal lives. If you say that in a context where we actually have no way of establishing who is vaccinated or not, then what are you as a business owner or an institution or even a state or a county going to do when you have a ton of vaccinated people who are now saying, okay, I can take my masks off? Like, of course you're going to lift mask mandates. And of course, the consequence of that is to increase the vulnerability of people who are already vulnerable because they've been unvaccinated, for all the many of whom, for the systemic reasons that we've already talked about. So you can see that like this business of creating guidelines that center people who are already vaccinated and creating guidelines to talk about this risk at a very individualistic level almost necessarily leads to this domino effect of events that increase the risk for people who are most vulnerable. And that's sort of the opposite of what an organization like the CDC should be doing.
But Ed, can I just jump in here? I absolutely hear what you're saying, because it seems to me that some of these policies that could be changed, even if temporarily, are very actionable, right? Like there is room for an insightful government to say, well, if we really want to help people get vaccinated, what we're going to do is we're going to say we're going to pay businesses to give people a sick day, you know, or something, mm-hmm. right? Like there are solutions, a certain set of solutions here, even if some of them are small bore, they seem to me they could be effective. But what I wanted to ask you about is ultimately, though, I mean, the public is made up of, in this case, 330 mm-hmm. million individuals. Yeah. And so doesn't some of the messaging have to be individualistic?
Yeah, look, I agree with that. And I write this in my piece, like there is an inherent tension here at the CDC being a public health organization that is meant to care for the collective. But that is looked to by individuals for guidance. Like I, as a person, want to know from the CDC what I need to do. I think the argument from a lot of public health folks is that the CDC's responsibility, while it exists for an individual, also primarily exists for the population and specifically for the most vulnerable people in that population. Like I am fully vaccinated now and the CDC should be happy for me. Thank you. But it doesn't have to prioritize me in its thinking. It needs to prioritize the people who are very unlike me, who have not had access to those vaccines yet. And it's not just an issue of policy, I think. It's also an issue of framing and of rhetoric. And this goes back to what we said about Walensky's statements about how your health is in your hands. President Biden also echoed the sentiment. He talked about how it's your choice. Well, of all people, the director of the CDC should know that your health is not fully in your hands for two reasons. Firstly, it's an infectious disease, so by its nature, it spreads. But also because your health is determined by all these societal factors, by matters of class and race and privilege that have echoed across the centuries to influence how individuals bear their risk right now. That's in place of rhetoric around your health being in your hands, which we know is not true. We could have had consistent messaging about how we are still in this together, that we need to look after each other, that we need to look after the people who have less privilege, right, less access than we do. Right. And I feel like that rhetoric has been incredibly missing. This is an opportunity for us to once again bandy together in a way that we haven't over the last year because of divisive messaging.
Well, Ed Yong, science writer at The Atlantic, Pulitzer Prize winner, it is always a pleasure to have you on the show, Ed. Thank you so very much.
Thanks, Meghna. Take care.
And by the way, we have a link to Ed's latest article at onpointradio.org. And as you heard, there's going to be a lot more questions about how to make sense of the changing pandemic as we look forward. But we're also looking back as well. So we've been reconnecting with guests that we featured on the show across 2020. Ken Gloss was with us last April. He's an antique book dealer and proprietor of the Brattle Bookshop in downtown Boston. Now, the pandemic forced them to temporarily close the store, only the second time they've had to do so since 1825. And here's what Ken told us last April.
Our business, we're absolutely no question that we're going to survive this, that we're going to get through it.
And this is how Ken reacted to hearing that a year later.
One thing that I'm very happy to say that it's a year later and I'm here talking to you and we're in business. I'll tell you, a lot of people are just thrilled that we're here. We're thrilled that we're here.
Ken's positive attitude and perseverance helped his store stay open, but it was not without its struggles.
Business was off, and I will say the PPP loans and Massachusetts grants definitely helped. We kept staff on. They're still working. We're even maybe over the summer looking to take on some part-time help to give our staff a break because they've been working very hard. I think the hardest part for me was just not being able to go to the movies, not being able to go to shows, not visiting with friends, going out to dinner. It was the social aspects of it. I think it's the interpersonal connection that's the hardest part, way beyond sort of the business. And even within the business is not seeing the people you see every week, every day, every time they come to the city. That's part of the hard part. And just talking to myself all day, it would get really boring. I think I'm interesting, but it's the other people that keeps life active and healthy and vibrant and making you want to get up every morning. And it also, with this disease, it makes you realize how valuable life and getting back to normal and sort of having that freedom to just smile at people, to hug people, to talk with them. Now, one of the good things that happened in another sense of 2020 is my daughter had our first grandson. And, you know, there was worries with the pandemic, you know, with my daughter pregnant. We couldn't go to the hospital to visit and see the birth. I will never look back at 2020 as being a total disaster because I have a grandson. I would not trade having him smile at me for almost anything in the world. And that's probably the biggest moment of joy. And the other one is that everybody's been healthy that's really close. We've made it through. Business is going to recover. I'm determined. And, you know, there's nothing beyond family in many ways.
Ken Gloss, antique book dealer and proprietor of the reopened Brattle Bookshop in Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.